What's up, everybody, and welcome back to Fireside Giants. I'm your host, Anthony Rivardo, joined by my co-host, Alex Wilson. Hey, guys, training camp is right around the corner. In fact, the rookies report to the facility tomorrow to get acclimated with the facility, to meet their coaches a little bit more and do some kind of pre-training camp programming. And then next week, the veterans report in training camp officially begins. It's right here. Football season is really, really close, and I'm super excited about it. But in the meantime, previewing this team and continuing to break down this roster ahead of training camp and ahead of the regular season, today we want to focus on the secondary, which received an overhaul this offseason. The Giants didn't invest any draft capital into the secondary for the most part, outside of seventh round pick Corey Black, the cornerback, but they did invest a lot of money in free agency into the secondary and made some major upgrades, and we're really excited about it. Some moves that will take pressure off some of their younger guys like Deontay Banks, while also just adding tremendous instant impact with these free agency signings. That's what we're going to go ahead and discuss in today's episode. But before we dive into all that, Alex, how are you doing today, my friend? And what are your thoughts on the Giants' secondary upgrades?
Doing really good, man. And yeah, listen, the Giants made some big time improvements this offseason. Really, the defense got the brunt of it. I know the quarterback position got three new players in Russell Wilson, Jameis Winston, and Jackson Dart, but only one of those guys can play in any given moment. The Giants really invested not just financially, but also with premium draft capital, Abdul Carter, Darius Alexander being the primary guys there. But financially, $100 million in the secondary. You know, that's a pretty penny. When we thought they would go out and maybe sign another WR1 to pair with Malik Nabers, you know, maybe add another offensive lineman, they really are sticking with pretty much the same exact offense they had last year with just a new quarterback in a year with Carmen Brasillo already under their belt. So hopefully they can make some progress there and whatnot. But the defensive side, I mean, John Mara said it verbatim, I'm tired of watching teams run up and down the field on us. So the Giants said, well, he's kind of right. They were doing a lot of that. You know, they didn't have to throw the ball much. They ran the football well against us. Once Dex Lawrence went down, it was, you know, most fans tuned out by that point. So, you know, I do think that the Giants have a lot of pass rush. They have, on paper, one of the best pass rush groups in the league. In the secondary, they went and said, you know, Deontay Banks, we threw him into the fire. We wanted him to be CB1. He struggled. And to be honest, I'm not really surprised he struggled. The Giants expected him to develop into a star, and they didn't really give him a chance. They changed his defensive scheme after the first season. They didn't have a competent running mate alongside him. And now, well, they spent a little bit of money to address those needs. Paulson Adebo on a 3-year, $54 million deal that has $38.5 million guaranteed. And they said, well, I guess you could say the pass rush is a cornerback's best friend, but their second best friend is technically the free safety, because you want to have that security blanket over top. Javon Holland is going to give that to Paulson Adebo and obviously Banks. I mean, who knows? I know he's going to have to win that job. Cordell Flott's going to be competing as well. And Javon Holland gets a 3-year, $45.3 million deal with $30.3 million guaranteed. So I want to, you know, take a second. We'll talk about them as players, Anthony, what they bring to this team. But also I want to break down their contracts and really how healthy they are, how great these deals are. They predicate themselves on, if it doesn't work out, the Giants don't really have that much to worry about long term. If they do work out, they have really nominal deals long term for some talented players that are only 25 years old right now.
Yeah, definitely a lot of young talent in that secondary, many of them entering their third, fourth, or fifth or sixth seasons. And honestly, that's not a ton of experience when you really break it down in the grand scheme of things. But I want to talk about Paulson Adebo, because you mentioned taking some pressure off of Deontay Banks or Cordell Flott, whoever ends up being the CB2. And obviously, we'll get to the contracts and break those down as well. I know you have a lot of great insights on that. But just speaking on the CB1 position and what a struggle it's been for the Giants to really get that one right over the last several years, you know, hoping Banks would step into that role and take it by the horns. And that just didn't come to fruition last season. But Paulson Adebo, why I think he's such an impactful player, will be such an impactful player to this New York Giants defense, is one key term. And this is a term I know certain viewers really love when I say ball skills. Paulson Adebo has tremendous ball skills. When the football is in the air, he knows how to track it, locate it, and get his hands on the football. And that's something that the Giants secondary really struggled with last season. They had only 5 total interceptions, which ranked 31st in the NFL. It was a far cry from where they were the season prior and the season before that with Wink Martindale's defense that was high-flying and constantly forcing turnovers. The Giants defense last season went on a 10-week, unprecedented 10-week drought. I think it was maybe even 12 weeks, just a long drought, couple months with no interceptions forced as a defense, which is honestly inexcusable and unacceptable. But now bringing in a cornerback in Paulson Adebo, whose best trait is forcing turnovers, I think is the best way to address that issue. Get a cornerback who does get his hands on the football, who does make those pass breakups. Because I think of so many moments last year, touchdowns from Terry McLaurin in the back left corner of the end zone where, hey, Deontay Banks is right there. The coverage is nearly perfect. Just didn't get his hand on the football. Amari Cooper, big catch down the left sideline. I think that was in week two or three last season against the Cleveland Browns. Deontay Banks playing the tightest coverage possible. Doesn't get his head turned around, doesn't get his hand on the football, and ends up being a reception rather than an incompletion. Those are the differentiating plays that I think Paulson and Debo converts for the Giants defense. He gets his head turned around, he makes those plays on the ball and demonstrates those great ball skills and ends up with some interceptions and some pass breakups that the Giants defense desperately missed out on last season. Now, like you said, the pass rush is the defense's best friend, or the cornerback's best friend. A safety is obviously one of those as well. We'll talk about safety Javon Holland and his impact on the secondary in a moment here. But I really think that the best friend for Deontay Banks this season is going to be Paulson and Debo, because not only is having a CB1 going to take pressure off of Banks or Flott, whoever the CB2 is, but also I think there's a lot that he can learn from his new teammate and how to get his head turned around and how to get his hands on the football. So, Alex, speaking of ball skills, what are your thoughts on that, especially considering that was maybe the Giants cornerback's biggest weakness last season, could be their biggest strength with Paulson and Debo in 2025?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes you need a veteran to show you the ropes. And I think with Paulson and Debo and Banks failing to turn his head around, like, these are things that sometimes you need someone that's actually on the field. It's easy to hear it in practice, Rome Henderson or their new cornerbacks coach is saying, you got to get your head turned. You have to do this. This is how you do it. And then, like, trying to actually translate that into a game-like scenario is not as easy as someone telling you how to do it or teaching you how to do it. Paulson Adebo is one of the most aggressive cornerbacks in the league. Sometimes it's actually to his detriment. You know, he will turn his head with the intention of trying to get an interception. Sometimes it'll go over his head. Sometimes he won't be in the right place because he turns his head too early. In my opinion, you know, one of the things that a really good aggressive cornerbacks do is they read the receiver's eyes. And I think that's kind of what Banks has failed to do at times. Like, he's sticky in coverage. You know, Anthony, you've said that in the past. Like, he's there in coverage a lot of times. He just doesn't get his head turned around. He needs to be able to, in that critical moment, see where the receiver's eyes are looking, time it out, and then make a play on the ball and get his head turned around. So, like, there are ways to identify when exactly to do that. And I think that Paulson Adebo, one of his strengths is actually being aggressive in that nature. So maybe Banks can learn a thing or two and then translate. I also think it'll be easier for him to test against WR2s. Obviously, when you're going up against the CD Lambs of the world and, you know, the Justin Jeffersons of the world, like, you don't have time to turn your head. Like, that ball, they're so good at masking things, like, when that ball is going to arrive. And obviously those 50-50 balls, like, it doesn't even matter. Turn your head, they're still going to catch it over you. So I think that him going up against worse receivers, worse talent in general, will allow him to take risks that allow him to build confidence, get some interceptions, make some big plays for this defense, and, you know, kind of be the aggressive player we hoped he would be when we drafted him out of Maryland. So, you know, I do think that that's a really good point. Having someone to watch in the other side should be a big, you know, learning factor for him. And then Javon Holland being over top. Last year, he obviously had a down season. Miami's defense in general was pretty bad. So, you know, I'll give him a kind of break there over a much larger sample, like 4 years worth of action. Javon Holland was excellent. You know, he was great the first 3 years of his career. Last year was the first year he didn't have an interception. So I do think that he will turn things around. You know, he was battling some injuries as well. So now he's fully healthy, ready to go. I do think that he's going to be a huge piece of the puzzle for the Giants, because losing Xavier McKinney, we felt that loss significantly. So, you know, Tyler Newbin going into strong safety where he can really utilize his run stopping quality. And then Holland being that ball hawk is going to be a really nice 1-2 punch, nice blend there. And then protect the cornerbacks as well. But, you know, just contractually, let me give you some information about these deals, because I think it's worthwhile to mention. Cap hit year one for Paulson Adebo was $11.7 million, right? So that's really low for a starting CB1. Next year, it's $23 million, which is a pretty baseline average cost in year two for a lot of these cornerbacks. You know, a lot of these deals are usually pushed a year or two with the cap hits, so this is not unusual. And then in year three, it drops to $19 million, which, if Paulson Adebo ends up panning out, $19 million cap hit for a CB1 is going to look like an absolute just godsend for the Giants. I mean, the cap rising so significantly, CB1s are going to be getting $22-23+ million per season. Their cap hits will be pretty high. So $19 million is great. If he doesn't pan out, Paulson Adebo doesn't become that player that's worth $19 million, the Giants have built in a just a great escape route. So after that second season, 2026, he will only have a $5 million cap hit if they end up cutting him. So $19 million cap hit if they keep him, $5 million in dead money if they cut him. And with Jackson Dart taking over long term, they'll have more than enough money to go out and get another cornerback and use that money for another player. And then after 2027, the dead money will be gone anyway. So really, really simple there. Javon Holland has a very similar contract structure. $9.9 million cap at this year for a starting free safety, pretty nominal. $17.5 million next year. So that's a pretty lofty number for a free safety, but obviously they wanted to create a little bit more financial flexibility this season to be competitive, and they had to go and get some quarterbacks. And then if they want to take the out and after that second season in 2026, really the 2027 offseason, they either have a $17.8 million cap hit for the 2027 season when he's only 27 years old, by the way, he's still in the middle of his physical prime. If they want to take the out and he doesn't live up to the contract, they can accrue only $4 million in dead money that they have to pay that offseason. So both of these players, if they move on after these two players, after two seasons, they only have $9 million committed to both of them combined if they want to take the outs. So the contracts are set up really well to maximize 25-year-old defensive backs that probably have their best football ahead of them, both coming off down seasons with historical success. Like that is, if you want to get value, that is the definition of value. So I think the Giants did an excellent job identifying players they weren't going to have to spend top dollar for, but because of those injuries, because of those down years, they were able to build in these outs after the second year in the contract to protect themselves long-term if things don't pan out. So really, like Joe Shane, I'll give him credit for, you know, there's a couple things this season he did really well, this offseason particularly, in the drafts the last 2 years. But one of the things he's done excellent since day one is manage the salary cap. And that, I think, has helped the Giants position them so they can take big swings. They can go and get these players when need be. And now it's now or never for this regime. So I do think that, like, they at least had the financial flexibility and they positioned themselves nicely to be aggressive this offseason.
I do agree with you on that. And I want to clarify for any fan, because I have seen fans comment before, Giants fans say in our comment sections that, why are we always near the bottom of cap space? Why do we never have any cap space? Like, Joe Shane has done such a terrible job managing cap space. Meanwhile, you're rightfully, Alex, arguing that he's done a great job managing the cap space. I see fans comment, the Eagles have the room to sign all of these great players and they never run into cap problems. You know, why can't the Giants do that? And it's actually because they are running into cap problems. They're just deferring those problems to the future. What Joe Shane has done is get all these contracts structured in a way where he doesn't need to add any void years to any contracts. The Giants have not added a single void year to a single contract since Joe Shane has been hired as their general manager. And that's a great thing, because down the line, those teams that are paying out all those void years, they have to pay them. They become pretty lofty, and you end up just paying a bunch of players who are no longer on your team. So that's one of the things that Joe Shane really has done well, is manage the salary cap space. Now, it is true, they are probably, I think they rank 31st right now in total salary cap space in the NFL. They don't have a lot of money, but guys, it's only mid-July. They're going to make roster cuts, and they're probably going to make restructures as well if they feel that they need to, but they probably don't, because they really are salary cap healthy and have a lot of room to operate, even though on paper they don't have many millions in cap space. They just have a lot of flexibility. So I agree with you. I think these are really good contracts, and I think this is a little bit of a boom or bust strategy, though, Alex. You know, signing guys like Adebo and Holland, who are coming off of these injury-riddled seasons. Obviously, Debo's injury was rather significant. That broken leg knocked him out for a majority of last year. And, you know, meanwhile, Holland was just kind of banged up and played through some injuries. But either way, Joe Shane was able to find value in those contracts, was able to sign both of these guys at discounted rates because they were coming off of injury-riddled seasons. And I think that's, again, risky in some respects. If they get injured again, it's not going to look all that great. Or, you know, if they just don't live up to the hype of lofty contracts, sure. But I do think that there is a real boom or bust quality to both of these signings. And I think that if you're taking it and looking at it from a projection standpoint, both of these players project to be even better than they have been in the past. And if that's the case, they're far going to exceed the value of the contracts that you just signed them to. I think in particular that Javon Holland signing, because $15 million per season for a player who before last year was on the trajectory to easily make $70 million per season, right? If he would have had the season in 2024, like he had in 2023, there's no way you're getting him at signed for $15 million per year on an annual contract. So I think there was a really great job here from Joe Shane finding value in the free agency market and signing some underpriced players at a contractual point that is going to age quite well if these players do reach the potential that you expect of them. And, you know, circling back to Javon Holland, just to speak on him a little bit more specifically, since I already spoke specifically on Paulson and Debo, I mentioned ball skills for Debo, and I think that that really is an important trait. I think it's a trait that Javon Holland possesses as well. And I think the better trait to really highlight for Holland, though, is versatility. You mentioned it, Alex. He's really good as a roaming free safety, that kind of ball hawk on the back end who plays that deep coverage. I think that's the role that he's best at, but he also does have a lot of snaps recorded inside the box as a strong safety as well. He really can move around the defense. He's recorded sacks before. He's forced fumbles before. He makes plays in the box, but he also, over the last 3 years, has a top five coverage grade at 91.3 overall when lined up as a free safety. So he can drop back and play that role for you that was left behind by Xavier McKinney, but he also can get up in the box for some fumbles and make some plays against the run. But the number one thing that I think Javon Holland is bringing to this defense that they were missing last season, Alex, is leadership. I talked about this a lot. The loss of Xavier McKinney, I thought, was a huge one for the New York Giants. You know that I was a major advocate for re-signing Xavier McKinney. And one of the reasons that I argued that the Giants should re-sign him was his leadership qualities. We saw a clear difference in personality and confidence from Deontay Banks and many of the other young cornerbacks in the Giants locker room last season, as opposed to when they were playing alongside McKinney. The argument that I made, Alex, and I'm sure you remember it, is having a leader in the room doesn't always mean having a 35-year-old veteran like Antoine Bethea when Dave Gettleman signed him. Sometimes it means having a guy with some status who's really young and easy to relate to. Deontay Banks is not going to relate to a 30-year-old safety. He's going to relate to Xavier McKinney, who's maybe only 2 years older than him, but played under Nick Saban, has been a captain for a long time, and already has status as one of the premier players at his position in the NFL. That was a leader for the New York Giants defense, and that's what they were missing last year. No disrespect to Jason Pinnock. I'm not saying that he was a bad leader by any means, and I think he's a good player, but he doesn't have the status of a Xavier McKinney, and he definitely didn't have the leadership qualities of a young star like McKinney. And that was missing in the Giants locker room last year, but now they have that again with Javon Holland, who, by all accounts, was an excellent leader with the Miami Dolphins, but is still a young and ascending player that Deontay Banks and other young defensive backs can relate to and can have conversation with and feel like they know who they're talking to. So I think that's a really crucial aspect of that signing. Not only are they adding more talent, just generally speaking, to the secondary, but I think they're reintroducing some young blood, energy, and leadership into that secondary, which I think will pay dividends as we continue to find out how to get these secondary pieces to play up to their potential, like Deontay Banks, Cordell Flott, Dane Belton, and some of the these others. So, Alex, what are your thoughts on that? You know, Javon Holland stepping into that role that McKinney used to play. He's versatile. He's best as a deep safety, but also he's a great leader, and a great leader is what this Giants secondary really needs right now.
I mean, the whole team, they really just need leadership in general. So, you know, the defense has been begging for it. I mean, Dexter Lawrence, some guys are paid to be leaders, but they're just really just great players. I think Dexter Lawrence isn't necessarily a great leader. I think he's just a great player. We kind of saw him jawing with Deontay Banks last year, and that whole thing kind of situation unfolded. Like, that's where you'd want a McKinney. You know what I mean? Like, that's where you'd want a guy that thinks like a defensive back. Instead, you have a defensive tackle trying to think like a cornerback and trying to, you know, give advice or whatever might have happened on the sideline. So I think that they lost a major piece to their leadership combination. And, you know, Bobby Okereke obviously is one of those guys, but the truth is like, you kind of just need to have experience back there, especially when you have a young secondary. So, you know, Holland's going to play a huge role. I do think that's a good point. But I wanted to reflect on something you said earlier. I wanted to get my two cents in. You talked about how, you know, some teams pay the bill later on, you know, for some of these contracts. You said the Eagles like pay the bill later on. Teams that pay the bill later on, there's two types of teams that do that. There's the New Orleans Saints, who are currently in absolute hell. And there's the teams that identify they have a championship window and they go all in and push that money to the future. The Eagles identified they had a championship window. They voided Jalen Hurts' contract like 4 years down the line. So like, they're paying cap hits for 4 years after he's even gone. And they'll just keep, you know, eating that. And the truth is they'll probably win multiple championships in that span of time. So like, they'll happy with just one. The Giants won one championship. We were paying, you know, Jackson Dart's future contracts for a couple of years down the line. I would sell that in a second. I would say, absolutely, sign me up for 4 years of dead Jackson Dart money just for a championship. I think most people would agree with that. So, you know, that's kind of what good teams do. They identify those opportunities to, you know, compete in a window, and then they push that money into the future. So the Giants, let's assume Jackson Dart pans out. It's a big assumption. Let's just say, not assume, but let's just say Jackson Dart pans out long-term and the Giants identify a window of opportunity where they can be a contender. they will extend him early and they will create void hits into that contract when those years start to come around so they can sign other players like AJ Brown's of the world. You know, if you want to add, you have Devontae Smith and AJ Brown, you have Malik Nabers, you're going to have to pay him one day. Like, there's definitely things they're going to have to do and they're going to have to create money. And the best way to create a void year, the best player, best position to create void years around is your quarterback, because they're going to be on your team for a very, very long time and you need them. You know what I mean? Like, you don't really usually create void years for receivers unless they're like Jamar Chases of the world, but they'll create void years for Joe Burrow. You know, they'll create void years for Jalen Hurts and like the position you can't live without, because their salaries are so astronomically high, $50+ million per season for the good ones. So, you know, if the Giants find themselves in that window, and right now we're just entering a window where Jackson Dart's in the first year of his rookie contract and he has 5 years, if he pans out, they probably won't go in the direction of picking up his fifth year option. They'll extend him early. But I do think like the Giants, they've got like a winning lottery ticket. It just has to hit. You know, like there are a couple numbers away, but the last number is Jackson Dart. Like if he pans out, this team has a really bright future. If he doesn't, you're back to square one, kind of trying to figure out what your situation is going to be long-term at the most important position in football. You probably have to develop a young player after trying to develop Jackson Dart. So like they really gotta, I like Dart a lot. I think that he's got all the potential in the world. I love his mobility. He's smart as hell. He is charismatic and has so much aura, and you know, that personality is going to live in New York. Like everyone's going to love that. But if he wins, man, if he's successful here, New York is going to love this guy. He's going to be a king. So I really hope that he does pan out. He's got all the talent. He just, you know, it's going to take some time though. Like let's just remember that it took Josh Allen 3 years. It takes good quarterbacks a long time to really get to their peak potential. 99% of the time, unless you're Patrick Mahomes, like, or even Lamar, you need to be, and even Lamar took a couple of years to really get there. So I think that we have to be a little like relatively patient with Jackson Dart, because he is a 25th overall pick. He doesn't have like elite traits by any measure, but like, if they build a good foundation around him, an elite pass rush, a good defense, it will expedite his growth. You know what I mean? A good roster around Jackson Dart will expedite his growth, as it did with Jalen Hurts too. You know what I mean? So like, I do think that they have to position him for success. And so far, I'm encouraged by what I've seen this offseason.
As am I. And I do think that the Giants have taken steps towards building that foundation for Jackson Dart. And that's one of the reasons that we praise the pick so much, and why we praise Joe Shane's offseason in general, because he added insurance at the quarterback position while also providing stability and potential for the future. He added a lot of talent to that defensive line to make one of the best units on paper in the league. He added talent to the secondary. He really addressed major needs and set a foundation for this team to hopefully build towards success this season and then turn it loose with Jackson Dart in 2026. So that's the goal. This is a little bit of a bridge year for the Giants. This is the year where they show, hey, we're making the right moves, we're putting the pieces in place, we're setting the stage for a big outing in 2026. That's what the 2025 season is going to be about. Now, can they go on a Cinderella story run and win a Super Bowl? You can't ever rule it out. It's not likely, but it's possible. And I know that the Giants are going to try and be as competitive as they can be this season, but realistically, that should look like about 7 wins this year, close enough to the playoffs to make John Mara feel as though they're moving in the right direction and turn it loose with the rookie and a lot of talent surrounding him in 2026, who's no longer going to be the rookie then. But yes, I'm really excited for Jackson Dart, really excited for the direction of this team, and very happy with some of the moves that the New York Giants made to upgrade their secondary and other portions of their team this offseason. So a great discussion here on Paulson Adebo, Javon Holland, and really just the secondary and defensive backfield at large, and how important it's going to be to the Giants' success this upcoming season. That breakdown and many more on the way over the next week as we lead into training camp. And then next week, once training camp begins, you guys can be ready for practice takeaways, training camp recaps, and all of that fun stuff right here on Fireside Giants. So make sure to leave a like if you enjoyed, subscribe to the channel if you're new, ring the bell so you don't miss an episode, and comment your thoughts down below in the comment section. If you're listening to Apple or Spotify, make sure to leave us a 5-star review. Go ahead and follow us on all of our social media channels at Fireside Giants. Without further ado, I'll catch you on the next one. Have a good one, and let's go New York Giants.